The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is the Showdown. With Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, WEC, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. Behind the glass, Joel McFadden. Make sure to take your calls. We're going to open up the phone lines real quick tonight. And, of course, the Celtic, Jason Niven, who's freaking out, not paying attention to anything that we're doing on this show because he's got his eyes glued as his Boston Celtics and LA Lakers are taking on the LA Lakers, and I guess the jump's going to happen about right now there, Celtic. Oh, he is nervous. Look at him. Oh, anyways, let's get down to some mixed martial arts here. Special guest in studio, Tyler the Intern is back. Just got to keep my eye on this guy because he's getting too popular. I understand at the MMA Expo, you're already getting some fans out there.
Yeah, I had one fan come up to me. It was pretty cool to have someone ask for you, but maybe it's something I'll have to get used to.
Yeah, and imagine what I went through in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah, yeah. From what you told me, it sounded like it was crazy.
It was a bit of a gong show, to say the least. I mean, if I had my choice, I would pack up, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, and I would move to Vancouver because it was unbelievable. The treatment that I got out there, and just, you know, I had to do a whole media tour on, you know, stations like Breakfast Television, and then I was on the Urban Rush Show, a variety of radio stations, and just, it's a different world out there, man. Sportsnet out there is a different ball game altogether. I mean, we get some major play right across this country, but I've never experienced anything like what I experienced in Vancouver. I was telling Tyler before we came on air, just one of the stories where I walked back from the Sportsnet Pacific station back to the hotel, which is generally, the guys are telling me, 25 to 30 minute walk. It took me an hour and a half. I was getting stopped by all the local Vancouver MMA and UFC fans, and went to grab a coffee at a local station. Can't say their name, obviously. You know why.
Yeah.
So I went to grab a coffee and I turned around. There's a crowd of people outside the door. So it was really, really cool. Had a great treatment at the weigh-ins. A lot of fans taking pictures and wanted autographs and stuff. It was unbelievable. Just, it's a surreal experience, Tyler. That's all I got to say. If you ever can get to this situation, you will love it. It's unbelievable. Lots of love. You get the odd, you know, Yahoo, if you know what I'm saying. But that comes part and parcel with the gig, I guess you can say. So anyways, UFC 115 in Vancouver at GM Place, the organization's debut on Canada's West Coast, an obvious success. There's a couple of articles in newspapers that are blaming some sort of, you know, craziness from what happened out there after the show, but, you know, it has nothing to do with the UFC. It's a bunch of guys, probably they had a little too much to drink and did what they did. It has nothing to do with what happened inside the arena, and the police said it was one of the calmer shows that they've had. You know, Vancouver Canuck games and stuff like that can get kind of rowdy. Oh, by the way, Vancouver Canuck, Darcy Hordachuk, the tough guy from the organization, met up with him, kind of gave me a lecture on how to keep myself safe in Vancouver, if you know what I'm saying, when I'm walking the streets and there's no one there with me, and told me a lot of Canucks enjoy MMA Connected, so they watch our show, Tyler.
Yeah, you may have to get some bodyguards next time you go to Vancouver.
Well, I had Bobby T with me. I had Bobby Torrens, and if you've seen Bobby Torrens, a senior producer from Sportsnet, he's got to be, what, 6'3"?
He's a big dude.
6'3", 240? Except when he's on the road with me and he orders the Pringles and the Kraft dinner and stuff like that, he's probably coming home the size of Brock Lesnar, but I digress. Regardless, great show, UFC 115. Main event, Rich Franklin takes out Chuck the Iceman Liddell, as I predicted. And before we go through the predictions from last week, I think I went like 2 or 3 for 11. It was one of those random shows where I took an absolute beating. But Rich Franklin took out Chuck Liddell. Your thoughts on the actual performance by Franklin and, of course, Liddell?
Well, I was really impressed with Franklin. I mean, he all you can say is he's a tough dude. I mean, if you see have you seen the video, like, after when he's in his dressing room, he's getting his glove cut off, and he's just in so much pain. And this is a guy who just came out of a fight with, you know, one of the most dominant 205ers in the world at the time, right?
I'll tell you the type of guy that Rich Franklin is, okay? When I was at the hotel Tuesday night or Wednesday night, and I was walking in, it was just after one of the recordings we did, so around 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night, and I was walking in there, and I saw him, right? And he was, you know, alone, and he was coming out of the elevator heading towards the security desk, and I was just kind of going in there. I went to go put some sanitizer on my hand, and what I usually do is when I go to, whether it's in Las Vegas or any city, if I make eye contact with a fighter, I'll generally say hi. But if the fighter looks away, then you know what? He's probably zoned out. Leave him alone. There's no need to have a conversation with him, you know, because, you know, they look at the media sometimes, and they tend to be careful with what they say. Some guys I've had relationships with forever, they'll, whatever, what are you doing? Let's go for coffee, whatever. But I saw Franklin, and he kind of didn't give me the look in the eye, so I kept walking. Went to grab the sanitizer, walked over to the elevator, and he was in the elevator by this point here, and these two other guys came in. So I stepped into the elevator, and I looked at him again, and, you know, he was kind of looking away. All cool, whatever. I got off of my floor. He went to his floor. The next day at the media workouts, so it was Tuesday night, so the next day at the media workouts, he comes down there, and he grabs the UFC's PR, one of the PR girls, and she waves me over, and comes over, and she's like, "Why didn't you say hi to Rich Franklin yesterday?" Right? And I looked at Rich. I'm like, "What's up?" He's like, "Yeah, I went to say hi to you twice." I said, "No, man, I looked at you," and stuff like that. And then she's like, "You're one of the few guys that he actually likes, and you didn't say hi to him? Way to burn yourself." I said, "Rich, I completely apologize." And I could tell you more stories about the rest of the week when I was walking back after the weigh-ins. I was walking back to the hotel, and this SUV all souped up comes by, and it's kind of stops right at the lights, and it's Franklin. He's like, "Hello, Joe," and it's just, he's now, then he starts mocking me from there. So that's the type of guy that Rich Franklin is outside of the cage. Oh, and Bobby Torrance told me after the weigh-ins, when the UFC, I don't know if you know Bert's the guy they call, Joe Rogan calls him the babysitter of the stars, was rounding up all the UFC fighters to get back into the shuttles that takes them back to the hotel. Franklin jumped the fence to go talk to the fans, sign every autograph there. I think Verno, our camera guy, was recording it all. He stayed there, basically told the UFC to leave if they wanted to leave. He'll find his own way back. Took pictures and signed every autograph of every fan that was there. That's the type of guy that Rich Franklin is.
No, and you can tell with all his interviews, he's a really decent dude. And to knock out Chuck Liddell with one arm, I mean, and the other one being broken.
Yeah, that kick was brutal.
I mean, that's a really tough guy and a tough fighter. And he's broken his hand in fight before. I mean, his nose is permanently disfigured because of Anderson Silva. He's a straight up fighter. And for there's been people out there say, you know, he's a teacher who fights. Well, I think it's more of he's a fighter who used to teach.
Exactly. And the one thing about Chuck Liddell, I want to make it clear, because people are ripping Chuck Liddell apart and stuff like that. Look, Chuck Liddell still has the skills to compete. He's a fighter. He's got great striking still. No ifs, ands, or buts. The problem with Chuck Liddell is his brain. Post-concussion syndrome. Let's face it. He suffers from it. And the more fights that a guy has, the easier he is to knock out. The whole situation with what Rich Franklin hit him with, it was a good shot because Chuck was kind of walking into that shot, but he would have laughed that off 3 or 4 years ago. There's no way that punch would have ever knocked him down. But the problem is the multiple concussions makes it so much easier to knock a guy out like that. You remove that PCS from Chuck Liddell, I guess you could say for any other fighter, Liddell still has the skills to make a great run in the light heavyweight division. But thankfully now, he did what he had to do. He doesn't ever have to come back. I hope he doesn't ever come back. And I'm hoping the next time I speak with Chuck Liddell has to do with some sort of UFC PR thing and nothing to do with fighting, because I think it's time. It's obvious. He should hang up the gloves. Even John Hackelman was very disturbed about the whole situation when he saw Chuck Liddell lying on his back. You know, we've seen this scene so many times in different fights, staring at the lights. The time has come for Chuck Liddell to hang up the gloves.
Oh, definitely. I mean, age has caught up with him. His chin is not what it used to be. Unfortunately, like you said, every time you take a big shot and you get a concussion, it's easier to get that next concussion. With Liddell, I mean, he's a power puncher, and punchers or strikers will always have their power, but the speed begins to fade. And you know, when your speed and your reaction time starts to fade, and you're still fighting top competition, you're gonna end up taking big shots. And Liddell, he could probably fight lesser competition and knock guys
That's
out.
That's Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, and you know what? There is a time to hang him up, and for Liddell, it's that time is now.
The one thing that made me smile ear to ear, because when I was doing all the interviews and the people are asking me, you know, does Chuck Liddell have a chance or does Rich Franklin have a chance? And I always said this is Rich Franklin's fight to lose unless Chuck Liddell shows up there with a full mixed martial arts arsenal, because he does have wrestling and he does have underrated submission skills. We just happen to never see them when he competes in the octagon because he's always going for a knockout. And when he took Rich Franklin down in the first round, I smiled because, well, the only round really, but I smiled ear to ear because I said, now he's showing that he can take this fight anywhere else. And I really believe that if he would have used his mixed martial arts arsenal, the full strategy, the full options available to him, he could then set up the knockout. Mm-hmm. Not to go in there and just try and stand and bang, but, you know, Dana said it and a lot of different, you know, blog sites said it. It's Chuck Liddell. He went in the way he went in and he went out the way he went out.
Yeah, and it's extremely hard for a fighter who's 40 years old to change the way he fights. I mean, you get into these habits, and you could tell that maybe Chuck Liddell thought he had something to prove, that he still had it. He could still go out there and knock a guy out like Rich Franklin. And, you know, if he gets into that big exchange, he'd open himself up just like the old Chuck would have done, but maybe he's just not as fast, or he was just, you know, doing too much to try and finish the fight. So a lot of things were against Chuck Liddell in this fight. And I think it was really telling before the fight he was saying, I'll never not throw that right hand.
Well, you know what, Chuck Liddell, thank you very much for the memories. And again, I hope the next time I get to speak with Chuck Liddell will be at some sort of UFC PR function, because hopefully it's not about him stepping into the cage. Now, Rich Franklin obviously broke, I think it's his ulna bone. Is your ulna bone in your forearm?
Yeah, it was the big arm. Yeah. Or the big bone.
The big bone. So he broke that. He'll be out for a little bit. Hopefully he doesn't have to go through surgery. We haven't got a word on that yet, but he'll be out for a little bit. Probably won't return until, you know, the fall or at least the winter of 2010 later on this year. Co-main event. Mirko Krokop Filipovic taking on Pat Barry. Barry breaks his hand and his foot in the first round after dropping Krokop twice in that first round. But then Filipovic comes out with the most unexpected finish to a fight. And he submits him, rear naked choke in the third round. What did you make of that fight?
This fight had me and my brother both smiling from ear to ear. Before the fight, I remember both of us thought that Barry was going to win this fight. And in that first round, it looked like he was going to. You know, I'm a big Krokop fan, and it was funny to see leading up into the fight. He's a standoffish guy with the media, and he was laughing and joking with the media.
He was amazing with me. I couldn't believe it. Rarely do I get it. The only time I've ever been nervous for an interview, and I'm never nervous for an interview. It doesn't matter if it's Brock Lesnar or if a guy's miserable, I'm never nervous. The only other time was Lorenzo Fertitta. That's a big cheese right there. That was the only time I was kind of, my heart was racing. Krokop, when I was interviewing the 101 with Krokop, and when I was asking him questions at the pre-fight press conference, even at the post-fight press conference, now by that point I was pretty calmed down. But when I did the 101 interview with him, I didn't know how he was going to react, and he was gold.
Yeah, and I'd never seen Krokop that happy before a fight, especially in the UFC. And coming to the ring, he was smiling, he looked relaxed, and I started thinking, you know what, maybe Krokop has turned everything around, maybe he's going to do something. But, you know, the way Barry came out, I was worried, and, you know, I kind of wanted Barry to win because I want to be right on my prediction, but, you know, I'm a big fan of Krokop, so when he started turning it around, you know, the fan in me started coming, I was getting really, really happy. And, It was great to see him take the mic away from Rogan and talk directly to Dana White. I mean, I was so so
that drives
happy.
Me nuts, by the way, because I had one fighter do it to me in my career, and I was just like, because it's a golden rule: you never give up the mic.
Never give up the mic. And but it's more of a throwback to Pride when they give you the mic.
Yes,
And so he was just kind of just saying whatever's on his mind, and I was so like happy to see Krokop win. I watched the whole post fight press conference, and he was even funny in that. I mean, it was good to see Krokop. If this is his last fight, because there's been some reports of him retiring, it was good to see him to go out very, very happy and relaxed and just, you know, having a fight that was his kind of fight.
It's like a redemption fight. Say, look, I still have it.
And there was that great moment in the first round when Barry and Krokop had maybe it was the first or second
first round, the embrace.
They had that embrace. That was a great moment in the fight. And
2 seconds later, they're throwing bombs at each other.
Yeah, and that was one of my favorite fights to watch on this card. And I was just happy to see Krokop win, even if it was a sloppy rear naked choke. I was happy to see him win.
All right, we'll talk more about UFC 115. We have to go through Bellator. We got to talk about the Ultimate Fighter finale. We got WEC 49 going down in Edmonton. We got to talk about last night's Strikeforce card. Your calls as well, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, and star 590 on your cell phone. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Don't wait. Hear it now. This is where you get the story. Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. And fan590.com. This is The Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. Special guest in studio, Tyler the Intern. And as we speak right now, we are fearing behind the glass, Joel McFadden, my producer's safety, as our technical op, Jason the Celtic Nevin, is going absolutely ballistic every time the Celtics nail a basket. So with the Celtics up there, McFadden, I'm sorry. You know, you may want to leave the room. Yeah, you may want to just get out of there until this, at least till this game's over, because I think, you know, Jason's going to lose his mind over there. But good stuff. Good stuff, Jason. You know what? I'll tell you one thing. There's nothing better that I love than when people have passion for what they do. And I believe passion breeds success, my friend. You keep loving your basketball, keep loving your Celtics, and don't let anyone ever tell you otherwise. And I'll tell you, you know this, Tyler. We've had this speech before. How many times have people told me, oh, mixed martial arts and UFC, it'll never do, you'll never blow up, you'll never have a career in this? Yeah. Thanks for calling. Nothing better, boys. I love passion. Keep showing it. 17-14, Celtics over the Lakers. Can we predict the Lakers, or is Celtic going to go nuts on us?
I think the Celtics are going to take it.
He's wearing a Celtic jersey, and he's flashing it in our face. Like, this is ridiculous.
No, I remember watching Celtics early in the season, and you can tell a good team from a bad team. They are definitely the cream of the crop, so I think they will take the game.
That's what separates me from the majority of other, you know, I guess, analysts, hosts, and anchors and stuff like that. Just because I don't necessarily follow a sport doesn't mean I'm going to sit here and rip the sport like they do about UFC and mixed martial arts in general, and it makes me laugh. You can enjoy sports, but because you don't enjoy something else, don't rip it. That's just my opinion. Anyways, we're going to get back to the whole UFC 115 conversation. We've gone through the main event, co-main event. If you have any thoughts, did you have a chance to see the card or anything mixed martial arts related? Should Chuck Liddell retire? Should he continue? Your thoughts on the card itself with Filipovic, Krokop, Pat Barry, Rich Franklin, the light heavyweight division? Give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, and star 590 on your cell phone. And yeah, before the when I said 2 minutes, I said TARC. We back to TARC mixed martial arts. We're trying to figure out what the word TARC means, and hopefully someone back there can find out, but that's a word I just made up. So yeah, I got issues. All right, Martin Kampman, you have something to say?
I was just going to ask you, getting back to the UFC 115, yep. What did you think of the Paulo Thiago Martin Kampman fight?
I thought it was Thiago's fight to lose, but Kampman did a spectacular job. I think Kampman, I'm not talking about the Jacob Volkman fight before this, I'm talking about the Paul Daly fight. The issue that I have with many, many, many fighters, and one of our regular callers, Kyle from Vegas, emails me about this all the time. He actually has a top 10 list. I'm not going to use the word he uses, but it's a top 10 list of, I guess we'll call it fighters that aren't very intelligent. How's that?
Okay, all right.
And he placed Kampman up there, and there's a whole whack of other fighters that he has in there. And the reason why I bring this up is I generally have issues with mixed martial arts fighters that only rely on their single base and not realize you've got so many different skills at your disposal, and you should use those skills against whatever opponent you're facing versus their number one strength. So against Paul Daly, would have been nice to see Kampman say, I'm not striking with this guy, even though my striking is good. Paul Daly's ground game has always been suspect. My game is to take this guy down to the ground. He didn't. He got knocked out. The fight was finished. You know, Daly's career went on a skyrocket until he got kicked out of the UFC, but Kampman used his mixed martial arts in this fight here and truly impressed me against Paulo Thiago.
Oh, I completely agree. I like you, thought Paulo Thiago was going to win this fight, and I didn't. The last thing I expected was Kampman to come out and dominate. I thought maybe he could win. I mean, this is a pretty even fight, but Kampman dominating, I did not think was going to happen. And maybe Kyle has to take him off that list, because he looked really intelligent in this fight. He was doing everything he could and shutting Thiago down in every single opportunity.
Big Ben Rothwell dominates Gilbert Ivel, but there are rumors that he may actually be in a bit of trouble with the UFC, to the point where he may be the first person coming off a victory to be cut from the organization. I don't think they'll cut them. That was some of the rumblings coming out of there. He was not impressed with his performance. Dana White wasn't impressed with his performance, saying, you know, that how do you get a 260-pound man on top of another one and not be able to finish the fight from the mound? So Big Ben, who, by the way, is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, not happy with his own performance. Gilbert Ivel's now 0-2 in the octagon. What did you think of the performance?
Well, I thought both fighters came up way too hard in the first two rounds. I mean, when you're 250-pound, 245-pound guys, and you're going like for broke in the first two rounds, you're gonna gas. I mean, heavyweights just don't have as big a gas tank as a 155-pounder. And when the pace they were setting early in this fight, I knew they weren't gonna last the three rounds. But you know, I thought maybe one of them would gas a little bit more than the other, and someone would get a finish. I guess, unfortunately for Rothwell, he just couldn't finish Ivel. I wouldn't cut him.
I wouldn't cut him at all, no.
I think you keep him around. I mean, if anything, he's a challenge for up-and-coming heavyweights. And if he can get his game together, maybe he can start making his own kind of run to contendership.
And the one thing Dana White said is Joe Silva is one mean little fatherless child. Can I say that? Fatherless child. He's one mean little, the word begins with B in case you can't figure it out. So we didn't know what that meant, but regardless, hopefully Rothwell does stick around. The opening fight of the broadcast was Carlos Condit taking on Kelowna's Rory, the Waterboy McDonald. I predicted McDonald to win this fight. I thought he would have a great chance versus Carlos Condit. Looked great in the first two rounds, but then got rocked in the third round and then got completely dominated. I never score 10-8 rounds. I was going to give this fight the last round at least to Carlos Condit, which would have went to the judges' scorecards afterwards, but with seconds left in the round, it was stopped by the referee. One of the two controversial stoppages. The other one was Matt Wyman against Mac Danzig. That fight there was Yves Levine, and this fight here, I don't recall who the referee was, but the stoppage was with mere seconds to go, and I don't necessarily disagree with both stoppages because you take a look at what was going on with Rory. He had taken way too much abuse, and the referee is not there to stare at the clock. I've been certified with Big John. We all know that, and I may have stopped that fight a little bit earlier, or I would at least said, you know what, you got to protect yourself a little more, get out of this position. But with mere seconds to go, it sent the GM Place crowd into a complete frenzy because Rory was obviously a hometown hero and favorite over there. And then with the Mac Danzig fight, he wasn't responding to Yves Levine's, you know, requests per se. So I talked to Yves afterwards, and it was one of those, you know what, even if I made a mistake, it's better to be safe and sorry. They're going to have a rematch, but Dana was ticked. He paid Danzig the win bonus as well, so he got a show and his win. What did you make of those two fights? Controversy or not?
Oh, with the Wyman fight, it's unfortunate for Yves because he's made kind of bad decisions in other fights. I mean, the worst was probably the Matt Brown and Pete Sell fight where he stopped the fight and then restarted it and let Pete Sell take way too much damage. In this case, I don't think it's as serious. I mean, you know, the guy's not out and you end the fight. They have a rematch. You know, it's unfortunate, but Dana kind of made up for it with the win bonus. With the Roy McDonald, Carlos Condit fight, I think there's a lot less controversy. But I think you hit the nail on the head. If you're going to stop this fight, it should have been a little bit earlier. And I agree. I don't usually score 10-8 rounds, but if you're ever going to score one, that was it. I mean, I don't think McDonald landed much of anything in that third round. And I guess he controlled the first two rounds. He wasn't landing as much damage as Condit, but I think you definitely give those first two rounds to him. And with Carlos, if it went the distance, you give him a 10-8 round, it would have been a draw. I'm not upset with the stoppage. And I think it's a good test for McDonald. I mean, I think before the fight was happening, I thought Condit was a little too big of a step for him. But now it proves that, you know what, McDonald, he's a young fighter, but he can fight with the best in there. And
he's only going to come back stronger than ever. I told him that the day after, and we're going back and forth on text and just talking. I said, you know, everyone has a loss on their record. Don't kid yourself. People aren't all going to go undefeated. You just happen to have it now. And every time a guy loses, look at George St. Pierre, he comes back better than ever. So this is a good thing for him. He can go back to the gym with Tashido and David Lee and basically work on everything. He'll be fine.
And with a young fighter like this, you got to protect him. I mean, after Condit was done with him, his face looked like someone took putty and like reconfigured the way he looked. So I think, you know, stopping and getting a guy out there before he takes way too much damage and, you know, maybe suffers an injury that can hurt his career, I think this is better for McDonald. He can get in the gym, hit it hard, and come back stronger. I just want to say one thing about Condit. I mean, that guy never has a boring fight.
He's just ridiculous. That guy's so awesome. His skill set is just he can take a beating, but that stuff pays. It'll take away from your career towards the end.
Yeah.
So don't ever forget that. All right. What did you think of the controversies? 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell phone. We'll take any topic regarding mixed martial arts, UFC 115, Strikeforce. Did you watch last night's show? We'll talk about anything. Let's go to John in Mississauga. John, what's going on?
How you doing, Showdown?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing great. You know, after watching that fight on Saturday, I have to admit, my heart was broken. My heart was absolutely broken because I'm a big Chuck Liddell fan. I watched the first UFC. I watched this guy absolutely grow into the sport. People think that GSP is dominant now. That time when Chuck Liddell was the light heavyweight championship, that guy was fierce. He was feared by everybody in the UFC. Even Tito was scared of him. And just to see him get knocked out like that against Rich Franklin, it just breaks my heart, and I hope to God, I love Chuck Liddell, but I hope to God he never fights again.
Yeah, I think the sentiment's the same with everyone, John. I think you're bang on. When Chuck Liddell was the reigning UFC light heavyweight champion, I mean, if you go through the history of light heavyweights, you can make a case that this guy is the greatest light heavyweight that has ever competed in the sport. It's going to take somebody like Shogun, for example. It's going to take him a long time to be able to defend that belt as many times as Chuck, and to be considered as one of the greatest UFC light heavyweight champions.
I totally agree, and I got one other comment.
Yep.
After that Anderson Silva fight, when he just, you know, danced around in the ring, I was really annoyed by that. I was really ticked off. Just as a UFC fan who spent $60-70 to watch that fight, I think Dana White's got to give him someone big. Give him Frank Mir. You know, give him the winner of Carwin Lesnar. Give him someone huge, because obviously he's not being tested by anyone, and that's the reason why he did that, all that taunting and whatnot. And I just think it's about time he got a real test before he leaves forever. And I don't think GSP is the right fight for him. He's too big. He's too strong. He's too quick. I think he would own GSP, but I think him and Frank Mir, I think Frank Mir would give him a good test.
Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. So right now, Anderson Silva is going to be taking on Chael Sonnen at UFC 117, who, by the way, we had on our preview show, and we actually put the clip online. I think it's over 40,000 views right now on YouTube. I mean, this thing is really taking off, as well as our John Fitch interview. I got a story about John Fitch. I don't know if I can ever say it on the air, but that guy there got me and Bobby good. And man, practical jokes, he got us good. I will get John Fitch back. I talked to his manager, and I said, you tell John that next time I see him, he better be ready, because he's good. Anyways, Anderson Silva will likely relinquish his middleweight crown if he defeats Sonnen, and perhaps move to the light heavyweight division, or if he loses, will continue to move up to the light heavyweight division, unless he, you know, wants a rematch with Chael Sonnen, should he lose to Sonnen, which, you know, on paper shouldn't happen. But Sonnen, you know, he made a point. Doesn't matter what people think. As soon as Anderson Silva makes a move, he's going to just barrel right through him and take him down to the mat. You know, it's one of those situations where Anderson Silva wants to be tested. He's talked about wanting to fight Frank Mir, and he's talked about wanting to go to heavyweight. But Dana White and Joe Silva's theory is very simple. You cannot go to the heavyweight division unless, A, you clear out the light heavyweight division. By the time he cleans out the light heavyweight division, this guy might be, you know, 40. You know, it's going to be quite some time. So what do you make of this whole Anderson Silva stuff?
Well, I enjoy watching Anderson Silva anytime he fights. You know, aside from his performances where he dances around and tools guys. I know, like, heavyweight is probably too early for him to go up there, but I want to see him fight Shogun. I mean, I think that would be a super entertaining fight. And there's history there. So, I mean, the storyline is there, and I mean, there's a lot of interest for myself, and I'm sure a lot of people out there, to see Anderson and Shogun.
Former training partners.
Definitely.
You know, they've already just destroyed each other in training before, but then there was a bit of a bitter split. So and Shogun, he told us when we were at Toronto BJJ, he told us flat out, no problem fighting Anderson Silva. Right, first up for him is going to be Rashad Evans, and then we'll see what happens with Rampage and Forrest, and we'll see what Anderson does, you know, should he come back to light heavyweight division. So Shogun's got his plate full. I mean, we today at MMA Connected, we were looking at the rankings, and we just took a look and said, this guy's going to have his plate full. So we'll talk more about Shogun and more about anything mixed martial arts related. Make sure you give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, and *590 on your cell phone. Back with Tyler the Intern. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Share your passion for sports. Everything you talk about is on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. This is The Showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. Special guest in studio, Tyler the Intern. And behind the glass, Joel McFadden is now standing up against the wall, having his back against the wall, which is the right thing to do in terms of self-defense, as the Celtic is continuing to jump around, as the Lakers and the Celtics are tied at 23. So I think McFadden just, no, he was walking for the door. He's safe. He's pacing around. He's warming up. It's like a warm-up in a dressing room, Tyler.
He's got his hands up.
He's going to defend his chin. Listen, McFadden, chin down. Keep your shoulders in. Just, you know, keep your hands in front of your face. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine, man. We'll come back there in about, what, 20 minutes there? We'll take care of the Celtics. So we'll get, uh-oh, the Lakers just went up by two. Jack Nicholson freaking out. All right, tons of stuff to continue to talk about. We've got to go through this Bellator card, or at least the main event, the Ultimate Fighter 11 finale, WEC 49. We got to get to those for sure, but let's get to at least one call for sure. Ethan in Toronto. Ethan, what's going on, my man?
How you doing, Joe?
Good. Yourself?
Good, thank you. You're the one from Sportsnet, right?
Yep, I am.
Love it. What's it called? I just wanted to talk about Saturday night again. The fact that Chuck Liddell got knocked out so viciously by Franklin in the last 5 seconds of the round.
Yep.
I thought, yes, it was a bad knockout for him, but at the same time, he did dominate the whole round by his vicious kicks that I haven't seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he's going to be a great coach. You got to figure a guy who has such a experience in martial arts now, he can look up and say, I'm going to be a great coach now.
That's one thing that's an option for him. I mean, let's be honest with Chuck Liddell. This guy doesn't need any more money. His kids,
exactly.
Their kids, his grandkids, they are set for life. So forget about fighting Chuck. Coaching is one option for sure.
Now, the thing I wanted to talk about mainly is that I didn't know who Pat Barry was, to be honest with you, before the UFC. And I saw his documentary, and I was really intrigued by his life and the fact that he was broke before his last fight.
Yep.
He had to fight for every penny and everything else. And coming in, I thought he was going to really... His, to be honest with you, as you know, Krokov didn't do so well in the UFC so far. I've never been on the radio before.
No, so. Take your time, man. No worries. You're doing awesome.
And I thought that seeing Pat Barry's profile, you would kick him and it would be done. But Krokov showed who really he is. Like, obviously, I know Krokov is one of the best fighters I've ever seen myself in Pride and whatnot. So seeing that, I saw Krokov being back to his shape and form and strength, and he showed a lot of like he got knocked out in the first and second round, I think, twice.
Yeah,
he fell down to the ground, and I thought that was it. Once again, he's going to get knocked out, but this time he not only did he choke him out, but he came back with vicious kicks, and I thought that's what martial arts is all about. It's about getting knocked out, getting up, fighting back, and trying to win the fight. Either you're going to win or not, at least you're going to fight. And one other point I wanted to make is that I find that there's a lot of talk right now in the UFC. Like, I respect every fighter, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of talk right now going on where fighters are really talking about, and then when it comes down to fighting, they're waiting and waiting for the best moment. And I've done judo and martial arts myself, and I think that when you have a belt, when you have to fight for a belt, that's fine. You take your time and you see and you play smart. But when you have to, when it's a fight and it's not really a title fight, and you're there, just you're
an up and comer sort of thing.
Exactly. You're supposed when a round starts. Even Kimbo Slice, a good example. When they say fight, you're supposed to go for it. And if you get punched, you're getting punched every day for practice. This is your job. So it's almost like you're getting scared to get knocked out. Getting knocked out is a part of your job. It's either you're going to get knocked out, you're going to get choked out, or you're going to do the opposite to your opponent. What do you think about that?
Ethan, thank you very much for the call, by the way. It's tough to say it's different because, first things first, when it comes to guys talking before a fight, I never have a problem with trash talk, provided they do not cross the political line or any sort of personal line. I got no problem with that. But when it comes to being inside of a cage, strategy is the most important. And when you formulate a strategy for a specific opponent, there has to be some sort of aggressivity. You have to be offensive. You can't be defensive. You can be defensive to protect yourself, but you've got to be aggressive in terms of, I looked at this guy's fight. I trained, generally for 12 weeks, 3 to 4 months. I know what to do to defeat this guy. Go and do it. What I don't like you say, is passivity, where you got guys that, can finish off an opponent, but then doesn't do anything. We harken back to Anderson Silva versus Damian Maia, Thales Leites, at UFC 97 when he did that. I mean, Anderson Silva can go in there and finish guys, but at the same time, it's one of those situations where he does want to play it safe and he does want to protect his belt, so it's kind of hard to bother him. But other guys in general, I do agree they should be a bit more aggressive, but it depends on the game plan, especially if a guy is a counter fighter. He's waiting for the right opportunity, and if that opportunity doesn't present himself and he's sticking to the game plan and he's got good strategy, then at that point there, you tend to get that bit of a boring fight, and you hope. That's why I've always liked yellow cards, man. Yellow cards from Pride. If you guys aren't fighting, the referee stops it, yellow card, 10% from your purse. Now you'll see some action.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think context plays a large part in this. If you look at a fight like Rampage and Rashad, I think pride was something that got in the way of that. You know, maybe they stand back and they neither one of them wanted to give the other guy the satisfaction of beating them. And, but if you look at title fights, I think there's a way of playing it safe, but also being aggressive at the same time. Specifically, if you look at Jose Aldo versus Uriah Faber, he was playing it safe. I mean, I think at any point he could have finished Uriah Faber, but he was staying back. He's working the leg kicks, but it was an exciting fight still. Whereas, you know, the way Anderson Silva and Damian Maia, Anderson Silva laid back too much. He was dancing around, playing a little bit too passive. And then you have a boring fight where the fans are upset. So I think context is kind of an important thing when it comes to title fights and also kind of grudge matches.
And the other thing that I want to mention is the fans that boo in the arenas or fans that you know, just blah, 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 blah. That there's nothing more that boils my skin when I hear people booing that have never trained one day in mixed martial arts. They've never trained the boxing, the Muay Thai, the judo, like Ethan was saying, he's a former judo practitioner, the Greco-Roman, the freestyle wrestling, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu. To be able to train in all of these arts, and then at the end of class, now you've got to spar, you've got to roll, to not know what it's like to be completely and utterly fatigued and have absolutely nothing left in your system, and now you're told to go and spar. You've got nothing left in your tank. That's what these mixed martial arts fighters sometimes go through. Again, it's the evolution of the sport. We're going to get to a point where cardio will never be an issue in a mixed martial arts fight unless a guy gets clocked in the face, he gets tagged, then you know what? You're kind of rattled. Now you've got to work on instincts. But to see guys, if you've never worked a clinch before against the cage, you don't understand the difference between moving that underhook to an overhook or getting an underhook and being tossed on your face. One wrong move, you get a knee to the face, you can get an elbow to the face. That's why these guys are always neutralizing each other. On the ground, you know, you got guys sometimes holding each other's arms, trying to get free. You never know. And people that boo that kind of stuff drives me insane because you've never been there, especially in the later rounds. These guys just fought their hearts out for two rounds or four rounds, and in the last round, you start booing them? That is absolutely nuts. These guys have nothing left. They're still going to give the best they can. I think Dana White said it best after UFC 114. He's like, it's getting to the point now where some of these fans are so ignorant that they don't get it. When the referee in the first round looks to his left and goes, are you ready? Looks to his right and goes, are you ready? And he says, let's go. And the fans are already booing.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, just harkening back to what you said, is one of the things that annoys me is once it hits the ground, people start booing and asking for a stand-up. I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, you can't visually see as well, because the one UFC I went to, once it hit the ground, I had to start looking at the screen.
Dude, I sit three rows from the octagon. I spend 50 to 60% of the UFC staring at the big screen.
And I mean, it is kind of hard. So I'd be you know, curious to see what it would look like with a kind of a dream situation with a white cage, similar to how hockey put the nets in. It's a white mesh, and you can kind of see through it better. I'd be interested to see how that would work out for a UFC event. But I think it is the ignorance thing. I think a lot of these fans just don't know anything about the ground game.
Booing Anderson Silva versus Damian Maia is one thing. I'm not going to, you know, that's just, you know, you shake your head when you see stuff like that. But when two guys have given it their all, you know, and there's nothing, look at Rory McDonald. He gave everything he could in those first two rounds. He had nothing left going into the third round. I don't know why, but he even got tagged with that one punch, but he never quit.
I think that, like, some of the most exciting parts of a fight is when you know two guys have nothing left. And one of them starts getting that momentum going, and you know he has nothing left, but he's just running on, like, instinct.
Scott Smith. And he just, against everybody.
And he just keeps going, and he just keeps hammering it home. That is some of the most exciting parts of fights. I mean, one of my favorite boxing matches of all time, if we just want to look at another combat sport, is
Mickey Ward and Turugatti. I read your mind. Those three epic battles.
And there's I think it's the first fight, but there's a moment in the ninth or tenth round when these two guys look across the ring, and they're completely slowed down at this point. And they have nothing left, and they still put on one of the best rounds in boxing.
That was the first fight was when Mickey Ward was against, he had his back to the corner, and he's just taking an absolute beating from Gotti, and they just looks at him, he's half out, and he's like, come on, keep coming. It's like, wow, I mean, Mickey Ward, man, wow, you know, God rest his soul, Arturo Gotti, but at the same time, Mickey Ward was the man. All right, we don't have much time here. We got to go through these predictions real quick. Let's see what your thoughts are. Bellator Fighting Championships right now is going on, so we may already be wrong with this. But Ben Askren versus Dan Hornbuckle, I'm going to go with Askren.
And I'm going to go with Hornbuckle.
And you're wrong. Ultimate Fighter Finale this Saturday on Rogers Sportsnet, the only place you can watch it in HD. Main event for that six-figure contract to be called the Ultimate Fighter. Court McGee versus Chris McCray. It's a middleweight fight. I'm going with Court McGee.
I agree with you.
Matt Hamill versus Keith Jardine, I've got Matt Hamill.
I got Hamill too.
Chris Lieben versus Aaron Simpson, I've got Simpson.
I think the A-Train's going to take it as well.
Oh boy, Spencer Fisher, Dennis Siver could go either way, but I'll go with Fisher in this one.
And I'm a big fan of Fisher, so I'll stay the same there as well.
And Rich Antonito taking on Jamie Yeager, I'm going with Antonito.
And I will defer on this one and go with Yeager.
One of our boys, Mark Boots Holst from Ottawa, Ontario, making his UFC debut, taking on John Gunderson, got to go with Holst.
Yeah, if he can keep it standing, I definitely think he's going to win this.
All right, we also have WC 49 going down in Edmonton. Main event, Kamal Chalarus taking on Jamie Varner. I'm split on this one. I'm going to go with Varner.
I think Chalarus is just too good a wrestler for Varner to take it, so I think Chalarus is going to take this one.
LC Davis looking to rebound. He's in a bit of trouble taking on Grisby. I will go with Josh Grisby.
I'm going to go with Josh Grisby as well.
Hordecki versus Downs. I've got Hordecki.
I go Hordecki as well.
Two more. Mark Hominick versus Yves Jabouin. I'll go with Hominick.
I think Hominick will too.
Capuzano versus Wineland.
I'll go with Capuzano.
I'll go with Wineland. You've been listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.